This is the Weekend Wager with Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
That music only means one thing. Hockey. That's right. Welcome back. Weekend Wager presented by BetMGM Sports. Enough talk. Believe in your game. Believe in your bet. BetMGM Sports. Greg Wyshynski, the Puck Daddy, joins us now on 98.7 ESPN. Hopefully, will help us all win some money. Greg, how you doing?
Right here.
Greg, you there?
Yeah, hello.
Hi, we got you. Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Fantastic, fantastic. Excited to head into this weekend, that's for sure. Before we start talking about some of the odds out there, we've got two games later on tonight, some games tomorrow, but the Islanders took care of the Panthers earlier today, 5-1. They advanced to the playoffs. So they're waiting for the results of which game to dictate who they face in the playoffs. How is that going to work out?
Well, it's all going to depend on what's going on with the round robin. I'm not sure what the actual sort of seedings are right now. I've been kind of concentrating on these qualification round games today. But, you know, the way the NHL decided to work it was to have the playoffs be reseeded for the first time since 2012. And it's fun. I mean, it certainly adds another wrinkle to this entire thing where you're not sitting here just stressing over a bracket, but you are, watching the playoffs kind of organically find their way, which is, I think, a good thing, and the NHL would be smart to keep it going.
Do you feel confident in regards to the Islanders in their next series and their next matchup, regardless of who their opponent is, or are you really going to focus on the matchup before you put some money on the Islanders?
I think the matchup's important. I especially think if the matchup is the Boston Bruins, which is one possibility right now, then it's not a series I really like them in. I think the Islanders did really well to get the Florida Panthers in the first round here and made short work of them, because the Panthers are a more of an offensive team. They're not that stout defensively, over-reliant on their goaltender, who wasn't all that good this season and into the postseason. So now if you play the Bruins, you're kind of playing a mirror image of yourself. I mean, the Bruins obviously have a little bit of offensive pop with that top line with David Pastrnak, Patrice Bergeron, and Brad Marchand. But for the most part, they're a very, very reliable, statistically the best defensive team in the league this season. And, you know, when the margins are small like that, the Islanders kind of need to be playing a team that's going to allow a little bit more for them offensively. So when you're playing a team like Boston, that's a real shutdown team. I think that's a tough matchup for the Islanders.
Puck Daddy joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. We can wager. I know one of your favorite plays is tomorrow, but before we get there, you got the Maple Leafs and the Blue Jackets going at it tonight in about 20 minutes, and the Canucks and the Wild a little bit later on at 10:45. Any plays in these two matchups that you like?
I liked the Canucks in that game. I didn't see what the latest money line on that is, but they've kind of figured it out. You know, they're a young team, a young core. And in their first game of the series, they took an L against the Minnesota Wild, who are more of a veteran team and a defensive team. And I think that was a good education for them. Their young stars, Brock Besser, Elias Pettersson, and Quinn Hughes and others, have really played well in the last two games in a way that kind of maybe indicates that the education that a young team needs in order to figure out how to win in the postseason has maybe happened in the series. So, I've been liking the regulation win plays in these playoffs so far. I've been pretty successful with them, including the Calgary Flames last night over Winnipeg. But, you know, this has been a tightly played series. I don't know if I'll go there with it, but I do like the Canucks to maybe win this one tonight.
So right now, the line that I'm seeing on BetMGM, you've got +1.5 for -278, and the money line is at +104.
Yeah, I think a lot of people expect this series is going to go to the full five games. I mean, the way that it's been trending for the Canucks, they've got the wind in their sails right now, so I'd hop on that dog.
Okay, let's take a look at tomorrow, and let's talk about one of the games, one of the matches that you like, and that is the puck drops around 2:00, and that's Philadelphia and Tampa Bay. And you are on the over or the under in this game?
I'm on the under. The under over under that I saw today on I think it was DraftKings was 6, which is to me a little bit high. And these are two teams that can put, definitely put some goals on the board, but the, you know, the round robin games, a lot of them have trended to the under. I think these are two teams that clearly have their eyes on the subsequent round and not necessarily throwing everything at the wall in this round robin game. And I've seen some reports that some players may even be rested going into this game. So it doesn't seem like one where the priority is to put the pedal down and play as hard as you possibly can to close out the round robin, which to me speaks to this being a game that I kind of expect is not going to go over 6. So that'd be the play on that one, I think.
Okay. Any other games tomorrow that tickle your fancy?
I got to see what happens tonight. I mean, you know, I think to me the more intriguing game would be Sunday if there are some games left over from the qualification round, because to be quite honest with you, these round robin games, the majority of which are being played tomorrow, are really hard to handicap. I mean, they're kind of glorified exhibition games. Teams all have different priorities for what to do with them. I mean, a team like the Boston Bruins, for example, you know, it's kind of hard to gauge exactly what they want to get out of this last game, considering the previous couple of games have just been duds for them. And are they working on things? They feel like they need to get their footing under them before they go to the next round. Are they looking to rest up people? The way that these round robin games have played out has been very unpredictable. So the plays tomorrow, I mean, I'm just staying away from that round, and I'll rejoin some of those teams when the games start mattering more.
Greg, before we leave, you were on with us 2 weeks ago, and that's prior to when things were really starting to heat up. Based on what you've seen the last 2 weeks, in regard to futures bets and who you think maybe is, you know, anybody impress you, anyone disappoint you? Has your opinion changed on a team that maybe you thought was going to do well and really have a shot of winning the cup or not? Has anything changed based on what you've seen the last 2 weeks?
Still on Tampa. I had Vegas coming out of the West. They have been very impressive in the qualification round games, with the caveat being that those games are glorified scrimmages again. But the one team that I think a lot of people have looked at since the beginning of the tournament and has in no way disappointed are the Colorado Avalanche. That was a team that for the most of the season has had players out of the lineup with injuries here and there. They've not really had their full squad together much at all this year. And then everybody got healthy, obviously, with the months-long pause to the season. And so far, they've been as advertised. They've won in impressive fashion in their two round-robin games so far. They're a really well-put-together team. So you're not going to get much value on them. But, you know, I think what you're going to see in this tournament, Anita, is a lot of upsets early, as we've already seen even today with Montreal beating Pittsburgh. But in the end, I think the chalk's going to come out when you start to see some of these really accomplished, deep, successful teams start to enter the fray in the round of 16 next week.
Fantastic. Greg, thanks for spending some time with us this evening. Please know I so appreciate your time and enjoy the weekend.
You got it. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Greg Wyshynski joining us. So I think what I'm going to do is we head into the break, I think I'm going to play a parlay. He said the Canucks, you can get them on the money line at +104, and then I'm going to take the under tomorrow of the Philadelphia Boston game. I'm sorry, the Philadelphia Tampa game tomorrow, and the under at 6, which is at -118. I think maybe what I'll do is I'll play a two team parlay right there and see how I do. All right. 800-919-3776 is the phone number if you want to get on board. We're going to start talking some PGA Championship, because they're still playing. Keep in mind, the tournament is happening out in San Francisco, the TPC Harding Park. And so, obviously, 3-hour difference. Tiger Woods is still at it right now. Rory's still at it. Brooks Koepka's still at it. We get back, I'll give you a leaderboard, and I'll share with you some of the picks that I like heading into the weekend. We'll do that next. I'm curious, who do you like heading into the weekend? Brooks Koepka's up there. He's only 2 shots back right now, and he's only on 11. This is the dude that I told you. I think he's going to win it. I think he's going to three-peat. We'll see. He's in contention heading into the weekend. No surprise there. More to come. You're listening to Weekend Wager, brought to you by BetMGM Sports. Enough talk. Believe in your game. Believe in your bet. BetMGM Sports here on 90.7 ESPN.
This is the Weekend Wager with Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
So without further ado, the man that leads our crew, that's Doug Kazarian, joins us here on 98.7 ESPN. You can see him all over Daily Wager. So Doug, a very interesting first 20 minutes of my show today. I had Jordan Renan on with me to talk about Baker's the prosecution advancing in Florida and DeAndre Baker no longer being a Giant. And a longtime listener, avid caller to my radio show on the weekends, calls in, and unbeknownst to me, he was Quentin Dunbar's attorney.
Could you, you have a reach like that, you got sources everywhere, and even when you don't know you have sources.
Could you, Matt, I couldn't even make that up if I tried, right? Like, Andy from Miami was Quentin Dunbar's attorney. Anyway, it was a wild 30 minutes of the show, but excited to have you on. Let's kick it off. How about we start off with some basketball, because we've got a fun game taking place later on tonight at 9 o'clock, actually in less than an hour. You've got the Celtics and the Raptors going at it. Right now, the Celtics favored by 1.5. And here's the thing, Raptors have been really, really, really impressive so far in this bubble. I'm really curious what side of the coin you are on here, Doug.
You know, it's funny, not often do you get a defending champion, really, in any sport that just gets completely dismissed. But that's what's going on with the Raptors essentially all season, because they lost Kawhi Leonard. And they're sort of hitting their stride, right? So Nick Nurse, very underrated coach, he's been excellent. They won 6 or 7 in a row. Marcus Gasol's lost weight. Fred VanVleet's coming, continues to develop. Remember, he got an NBA Finals MVP vote last year from Hubie Brown. So they're starting to find their identity. Siakam has taken the lead, but I just can't bet against Brad Stevens. He has the best ATS record of any coach since 2013, and he also ranks up near the top in terms of top two, top three in our database, which goes back 30 years. Now, does that mean the Celtics are going to cover every game? No. But it just means that he helps them sort of exceed expectations, because that's essentially what a point spread is. It's about an expectation. This number's come down from 3 to 1.5. I agree with the line move. I'm going to take the Celtics plus the 1.5. Obviously, bet the farm on it. I don't absolutely love it, but I would take the Celtics, because I think they get the win here.
All right, and you can get that at minus 109, by the way. Here's a fun bet for you. Who scores the first basket in the game? Who do you, on a whim? I mean, obviously, this is just one of those fun.
I would start with Toronto players, because I don't think the Celtics, they're middle of the pack in the NBA, not middle of the pack of the bubble, in rebounding. They have some, one of their Achilles heels is rebounding, and the Raptors don't really expose that. But I'd say I'd give it to one of the Raptors, because I think they're going to get the first possession. And then, probably whatever the biggest payout of the Raptors starters. So whatever's the largest payout, I would just do it.
All right, that's fun.
So 3-1, if you get 3-1 on Gasol or Ibaka or Lowry or someone like that?
12-1 on Gasol.
Okay. Yeah, I mean Ibaka's not starting, but you never know if they do a matchup thing. So I would do 12. I would take Gasol 12-1.
Okay. All right. I'll put some coin on that. As soon as we get into a break, bigger picture here, in regard to the Lakers. Now, yesterday, LeBron James did not play. Reports are that he tweaked that groin again. That's a groin. He missed several games last year because of the groin. Your thoughts on the Lakers? I mean, I know they have the number one seed, Doug, but
right.
Is that the team that you think is going to win this whole thing?
I do not. Okay, so as you know, Anita, a lot of these books will shift their odds to protect how much exposure they have on a team. And so a book like Caesars has just been taking nonstop Laker money since last year when they acquired Anthony Davis. So right now, talking to odds makers on a head-to-head basis, so if you just played on a neutral court, head-to-head, the Bucks, Lakers, and Clippers all would be within a point. Bucks and Clippers would probably be the favorites over the Lakers. But in the futures market, when there's all that liability they're protecting, the Lakers are, I'm not going to say huge favorites, but they are just distinct favorites at Caesars, plus 180, and the Clippers are plus 325. So it just shows you, kind of like Tiger Woods, right? When his odds to win a tournament are never true value, but head-to-head, this weekend, he was an underdog to Shoffley and all these other guys, but he had lower odds. than a lot of the guys. He was an underdog. So it all depends on the index betting. So that was a little too technical. But my concern is, and I'm a Laker fan. I'm from L.A., grew up in the Showtime era. I love my Lakers. But they have some weakness. They're missing Avery Bradley. He is such a key guy in that starting lineup defensively, and he hits big shots. And that's compounded by the absence of Rondo. Now, they expect to get Rondo back eventually, but the Lakers team has a lot of holes, and just the offense looks disjointed right now. They're going to need some time to get these new pieces just familiar with each other. But also, I just think the focus and the effort, once they clinch the one seed, it's just non-existent, right? I mean, right now, LeBron and AD have to shoulder so much of the offensive load, and when there's really nothing to gain, there's no point doing it. But even with all that being said, they are the one seed, so there's these last couple regular season games, I would look to bet against them. They've just been so lethargic once they've clinched this. Even before that, against the Raptors, they got waxed. But this bubble, just the neutral court, so you don't have the home court advantage. You don't have the home crowd swaying the refs either. So I just think it's wide open. I would not take either one seed to advance. Now, if I had to pick a team in the East, I would pick the Bucks. But based on the odds, there's no way. I can't believe the Bucks are odds on favorite, let alone 230 or so. So I would definitely look at the Celtics, the Raptors. And then in the West, I think the Clippers are the team to beat, hands down. But I think the Rockets, I was saying this before, but they had some impressive wins recently. I think the Rockets are a live dog for sure.
Yeah, I mean, Harden looked great last night, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, look, again, the neutral court is so is such a big weapon. In terms of takes away the weapon. Because in the past, over the years, the 73-year history of the NBA, it's been the most predictable of all the sports, right? You factor in the single elimination format of football and March Madness. And then in the other sports, it's so much more like level of a playing field because of hockey. We know how competitive that is because a goalie can get hot. And then in baseball, look at the money lines, right? Like last year, the one seeds were like minus 50,000. And then the baseball, they're like minus $3, right? So you just it's a predictable sport. But now you have the bubble and this huge layoff where everyone's healthy now. And there's no advantage to what the Bucks and the other top seeds resting down the stretch. But I just think it's such a it's more level than we've ever seen in the NBA. And then on top of that, the Lakers certainly show vulnerability. So for the last two regular season games, I would definitely fade them. But I would be very gun-shy about betting on them come playoffs, even when the games matter.
By the way, and just a side note here, not betting news, but did you hear this? I guess this just came down. This was just reported about 30 minutes ago. Because the Nets made it to the postseason, Kevin Durant just made an extra $1 million right now.
Oh, gosh.
Did you? He didn't even play this season, but it's in his contract. And because the Nets made it to the postseason, he just got a direct deposit for $1 million about 30 minutes ago.
I don't get these clauses. Like, look, I think A-Rod was an amazing player. I had no problem with that huge contract he got for the Rangers back in the day, 20 years ago, for $25 million per. But then he had these clauses in the contract. If he makes the All-Star team, he gets an extra $50,000 and things like that. It's like, wait a minute. If you're making $25 million a year, you better make that All-Star team, right? Like, why do we have these, like, the Durant, does he really, they better go to the playoffs. Now, in terms of when they designed the contract, obviously, if they miss the playoffs, it's not on him this year. But I'm just saying, like, your team's paying you all that money. You should not get extra money for going to the playoffs in a league where over half the league goes to the playoffs.
It's really, really, really wild. Doug Kazarian joining us here on 98.7 ESPN Week in Wager, brought to you by BetMGM Sports. Before we let you leave, let's talk some UFC on Fight Island. How much would you pay, Doug, to visit Fight Island?
Well, a lot, because it's the safest place in the world right now, right? The quarantine little bubble. Now the fights are back in the States now. They're back in Las Vegas.
Oh, are they really? Because I loved the whole fight. I like the whole mystique of it. I like the sound of it. I like the name of it. It was sexy. It was fun. Oh, man.
And the fights were like at 8 a.m. or something ridiculous because they kept it on our time. So they had the rest of the day free after the fight on that Saturday. But look, I think Dana White did a wonderful job. He had a lot of events to put on. He started making plans. He didn't think he'd be able to put on these events in Nevada like he did at the training complex in Las Vegas. So I give them a lot of credit. But yeah, I mean, they basically built an arena on an island and held four events. So, and it was a smashing success. And think about it. This was before baseball came back, before the hoops came back with both the NBA and WNBA. So they were they had all eyeballs on them, and they did a wonderful job. But, yeah, right. You wouldn't have to pay me anything to go to Fight Island. I would pay myself.
So funny. So fun. Anyway, really, the premiere, the fight that's on the card, Lewis and Oleinik, am I pronouncing that properly?
Yeah, Oleinik. Yeah, I mean,
there you go, Oleinik.
Yeah, it's a fascinating fight, really, because sometimes they're fascinating because it's like, oh, two grapplers, this is like contrast in style. So you got one guy who's going to be throwing roundhouses and haymakers, another guy who's a submission specialist. So they're each going to try to go for their own sort of tactic and their specialty, right? You don't want to get caught with one of Lewis's punches, and you don't want to go on the ground with a guy whose nickname is the boa constrictor because he's going to put you in an uncomfortable position.
Ooh, I like that.
So I like the under 1.5. This is a heavily juiced, so in order to avoid that, I would probably go, if you can, not every place lets you, but if you can go Lewis, what's called inside the distance, so before decisions, right, before it goes, so inside the full round, so less than the distance. I would do that just because you have to give up a little bit of leverage. I don't know how you put it, but you don't have to lay as much juice. But I think Lewis gets it, and I would take under 1.5, too. I think Lewis has talked about trying to go out and get the knockout right away. I think if he does something foolish, Oleinik can catch him. But these guys are older, and I don't think they're going to want to go the distance. Usually these over-unders are 2.5. It's 1.5 for a reason, but I would still go under.
All right, so I'm sorry. So to go the distance, yes is plus 425, no is minus 715.
Right, it's not going to go the distance. I mean, these things are, this one is definitely going, I mean, so that's why the over-unders are usually 2.5. And
so I have the over-under at 1.5, the over right. at minus 121, the under at minus 110.
Right, so exactly. So they usually do 2.5. That's a usual number. And then a couple fights a card, they'll make it 1.5 because the 2.5 is just like so, like the 2.5 would be juice crazy, right? It'd be minus like right. 500, something like that. So they just move it to 1.5. So you have to, if you want the over, you have to get through the midway point of that second round. So each round's 5 minutes. You got to get past 2.5 minutes into the second round in order to cash the over. But the other fights on the card, you could probably tell, mostly are 2.5. So
yes. So how would you play this? Would you play the over under at 1.5?
I would play under 1.5. I think under it's a fair line. Okay. I mean, obviously, I was hoping for 2.5, but they're not foolish. So I would still take the 1.5, or I would play Lewis to win inside the distance, which is, you know, you can lay a little less odds on that.
Great stuff as always, Doug. Really appreciate it. Great to hear your voice. You know, because of COVID-19 and this pandemic, I know you and I have not been in the same studio in quite a while. But we do have videos on the ESPN YouTube channel that you guys should check out each and every week. But great to hear your voice, and thank you for spending some time with us this evening, Doug. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah, it was good to connect. I mean, this month is, we have all these sports going on. It's wonderful, but it's been a large drought for all of us. So it's good to connect and good to talk actual games instead of just total futures market. So it was fun, and thanks for having me on.
You got it. Doug Kazarian, always great.
This is The Weekend Wager with Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
A big horse racing happening tomorrow in Saratoga, and that's the Travers. Daniel Torgman joins us from America's Best Racing, and we do a show every Thursday night with Ashley Mayu, who's really, really fantastic. You can log on to my Twitter at 10:15 p.m., not this coming Thursday, but the following Thursday, with some fantastic picks. So, Dan, excited to have you on my show tonight. How are you doing, my friend?
Good. It's good to be on. And it's incredible. For as many syllables as there are in my name, it seems like you struggle more with Ashley's last name than you do with mine.
I think we haven't really known each other that long. I think it's really perfectly clear and evident that, like, I have a really difficult time in regard to names. I have no shame in, like, I can meet a person. I know somebody's face. I will meet someone and I will see them 10 years later and I'll be like, I met you here on this date. You were wearing this. You said this. But a name, I can't. I can't. I can't with names. I just can't. But anyway, let's talk horses. So really, really excited about the horses, the racing that's going to be happening tomorrow. Let's jump right to the seventh race. All right. It's the Ballerina Stakes. Who's the horse that's favored going into this race?
You know, you got a couple of horses here that'll battle for favoritism. The horse on the rail, the one horse, is named Serengeti Empress. If people have heard that name, even if you're a casual racing fan, you may have heard that name because she won the Kentucky Derby for female horses last year. It's known as the Kentucky Oaks.
Right.
However, since then, she hasn't done much. She's won one race, but she's lost a bunch of races. She's got a lot of speed. There's a horse outside of her named Cookie Dough who has a lot of speed. There's another horse named Latruska who has speed. So all those horses with speed, think about it. They're going to go out, and they're going to probably wear each other out. And so the race does set up, I think, for a horse coming from off the pace. For me, I think your winner is going to be the four-horse Bellafina, who will be a co-favorite, to be fair. But this is a horse who generally, she can run on the lead, but I think she's won her best races when she's sitting just off the lead and when there's a lot of pace to run into. You also have another horse that's a deep closer in this race, the six-horse named Pink Sands. Pink Sands is a horse that, you know, if the pace is hot up front, if they go blazing fast, she could pass all of them. And Pink Sands is 10-1 on the morning line. She may be 15-1 by race time tomorrow. So if you're looking for value, I think Pink Sands is the value play. I think Bellafina is the obvious play. The way I'd bet it, I'd bet an exacta with the four horse Bellafina and the six Pink Sands.
Okay. Let's jump to race number nine. Who do you like in that race?
Yeah, the ninth race is called the Weya. It's a mile and a half on the turf. It's the complete opposite of the race we just described, which was a short sprint race on the dirt. This is a long race on the turf. And for me, I really like the four horse here as well, a horse named My Sister Nat. And specifically because of the distance, she's a horse who's always closing from off the pace, hasn't really had great setups in the past, and now she's going the longest distance she's ever been. She's never been a mile and a half. She's been a mile and 3/8, so that's just slightly less than a mile and a half, and now she gets that added distance. I think she'll be probably around 3-1. I would probably put a win bet on her with some confidence. And if you wanted a little bit more of a price, though he may get bet, she may get bet down, the five-horse Olympic Games is trained by Christophe Clément. If you've been following racing at Saratoga this year specifically, Clément has been red hot. He's winning at like 35%, which is insane. That's the equivalent of like batting 450. Nobody does it, and he's just on an absolute rampage. So the five-horse Olympic Games is a horse I think you need to use in your exactas, but for me, the horse on top is the four, My Sister Nat.
Okay, I'm writing all this down as you speak. Let's go to race number 10, the Test Stakes. And, you know, the number five horse is the horse that, I mean, would you say arguably, regardless of gender, the best horse this season in horse racing?
So it's tough. I would say this. Everybody knows Tis the Law, who we'll talk about in a moment, and the Traverse has been the best three-year-old, the best horse on the Derby trail, the best horse on the whole, you know, Triple Crown trail.
Mm-hmm.
In the female division, Gamine is essentially the Tis the Law of the female division. She is the best of the best on the filly side. She has won all three of her races, though she was disqualified for one of them. But technically, she's crossed the finish line first in each one of her starts. Her last race, she won by 18 3/4 lengths. To give you perspective, when Secretariat won the Belmont, that iconic photo of like the jockey looking back and all the horses way in the distance, that was a 30-length win. That was like the greatest win in horse racing history. She won by 20 lengths left last out against a really good field. So in all likelihood, it's going to be tough to beat her. And so how do you make money in this race? Well, you make money one of two ways. Either you play a pick four or pick five, and this is sort of right in the middle of that sequence where you're trying to pick the winners of four or five straight races, and you single Gamine. You only use her in the race, and you look at it as a free square, and you hope to find a long shot in one of the other races to try to make your pick five pay. It's just like playing a parlay. It's like taking a team that's, you know, minus 280 just to fill out your parlay a little bit, and then you hope you catch, you know, a couple of horses at like plus 250 to really cash on the sequence. And so with Gamine, I think she's a shoe-in. She's pretty automatic. If you want to bet the race straight up, there are a couple of horses that I think that are long shots that could fill out the exacta. So if you want to play an exacta, the two-horse Perfect Alibi is 20-1 in the morning line, is a horse who's cutting back in distance, has been running longer, has been running a mile and a 16th, now going to 7 furlongs, which is just shy of a mile, and she has run her best races at the sprinting distance, so at distances closer to this. And her two races at Saratoga, both wins, and two of her best races, arguably. So Perfect Alibi for me. I think while she may not be 20-1 by post time, she may get bet down to the third or the fourth choice. The exacta with Gamin is probably going to pay at least 12 or 13 bucks, as opposed to just putting down a couple bucks in Gamin and just, you know, essentially, you know, making a minimal profit there. So I would play an exacta with Perfect Alibi. And if you wanted to go one horse deeper, I would look at the three horse Mrs. Danvers.
Love it. Love it. All right. Now we make our way to the race number 11, and that is the Travers. And of course, you mentioned Tis the Law. And one would argue, of course, that he is the best horse out of the 3-year-olds this year. But you like Uncle Chuck. Tell us all the reasons why.
I do. Spoiler. So look, let me just say up front, Tis the Law has been perfect this year. He's been incredible. He won the Belmont Stakes easily. He wasn't really even asked. And his only race at Saratoga was his first career race. He crushed in that race, too. So he's run well at the track. He's training well. He's in great shape. He's won all of his races this year. There's no reason really not to like him. The only case I could make against him is that he's already in the Derby. He's qualified for the Derby. And that's the ultimate goal, you would think, for a horse who won the Belmont. Now they want to win the Derby, go on and win the Preakness, win the Triple Crown. Why would you overexert a horse in a spot like this if it means potentially compromising him a month from now in the Derby when he's already qualified? Now, that's not to say they don't want to win this race, because they do. The ownership team is from upstate New York. They love Saratoga. The Travers is an awesome goal. But I think Uncle Chuck is going to force, or would force, potentially, Tis the Law to exert himself to a degree where he might be compromising himself a bit moving forward. I just don't think they should empty the tank with Tis the Law. And I think Uncle Chuck is a horse who has really faced minimal pressure to date in his last race, the Los Alamitos Derby. His jockey, essentially, they could have won that race by 10 lengths. They could have blown the field out. His jockey, who's from the East Coast, by the way, flew out to California just to ride him in that race and then came back. He actually ended up getting coronavirus, testing positive for coronavirus, because he went out for that trip, which is a whole other story for another time. But when they were in that race, he had a chance to just kind of just leave the field, blow them away. What his jockey did was he kind of held the horse back a little bit so he could feel pressure from each side, so that he could sort of work for it a little bit to make him earn it. And I think when I saw him react to that visually and I saw him stride away, it's a stride that I haven't really seen often. I've only seen it with a few horses over the past couple of years, and the types of horses that come to mind specifically are American Pharoah and Arrogate, who, of course, won the Travers for Bob Baffert. Bob Baffert trains Uncle Chuck, going for his fourth Travers. Bob Baffert, notorious for shipping horses out from out west to the East Coast on the biggest race days. The Travers, one of his favorite races to come and steal. And so I think this is just another one. Uncle Chuck needs the points to get into the Derby, and I think he's going to run a big race on Saturday.
So... Story. I played golf at Spook Rock today, and and this one dude who oversees our Friday game, his name is JL, and he's really big into horse racing. And so I said to him, based on, you know, the video, the show that we did yesterday with Ashley, and we talked a lot about Uncle Chuck, I said, hey, $50, Uncle Chuck upsets Tis the Law. He's like, you don't know what you're talking about. You're crazy. Stick to football. Stick to golf. You don't know anything about horse racing. I said, okay, I don't know anything about horse racing. I said, $50. I said, Uncle Chuck finishes before Tis the Law. He's like, well, whoever wins has to, like, whoever finish, they have to win. Like, they don't just, like, one come in front of the other. And I was like, what do you, if you're scared, say you're scared. And he's, so anyway,
it sounds like
based on our conversation and Ashley's analysis last night and your pick tonight, I feel really good that just know that if Uncle Chuck wins tomorrow and beats Tiz the Law, I'm $50 richer because of you.
Well, I'll be rooting for you. I'll be rooting for me. I'm going, look, in playing, I talked about pick fours and pick fives. I'd be silly to leave out Tiz the Law because, look, I mean, on his best day, he's proven to be the best horse. And so if he does show up with his best, he's going to be tough. I'm just banking on him not showing up with his best and with Uncle Chuck being a special horse. And we haven't seen that. Yeah, I mean, we've seen Uncle Chuck be good. We haven't seen greatness yet, but I think we could see that tomorrow. Just want to mention, for a long shot, if you're betting the exactas or trifectas, the 7, Caracaro, has only run 3 races, has a trainer who's come to Saratoga before, won with like a 65-1 shot a couple of years ago in a big stakes race. Look at Caracaro, the 7 horse, ridden by Javier Castellano, who's also legendary in Saratoga as a jockey and loves the Traverse. So that's his race. And so Caracaro, for me, would be a nice horse to put underneath near exactas.
Fantastic. Great stuff as always, Dan. Thank you so much for spending some time with us this evening. Really do appreciate it. Enjoy tomorrow and enjoy your weekend.
Thanks. Good luck to everyone.
You got it.
This is The Weekend Wager with Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.